Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In Season 2, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for His purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do His will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
We hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for His purpose. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Taming Tribulation. Today, Jeremy and I are continuing on with the story of David in 2 Samuel. And right now, where we are in the story is David, king of Israel, his son Absalom, has convinced a part of the Israelite army that he wants to be king and that he would be a better judge and king than his father David. Right now, David has taken his part of the army and has fled, and Absalom has been told to chase down his father from his advisors. So Absalom's taken this poor advice to go find his father, kill him, take over his army, and now he can be the final king of Israel. Before we jump into 2 Samuel 18, I just want to mention one part in the previous chapter, and I want to mention this part because it really emphasizes how evil Absalom has become, and that this isn't a chase of his father just because he wants to be the king of Israel and he actually thinks he would be a better, more righteous king. This is purely bent on evil and destruction. So there's a part of the story where Absalom has an advisor named Ahithophel. And Ahithophel was an old advisor of David. And now Ahithophel has chosen to be an advisor of Absalom. So what happens here is Ahithophel tells David, what you should do is chase down your father, go and kill him. But before you do that, so that everybody knows that you're king, you should sleep with all of your father's wives in front of Israel, so that everybody knows that you're now in charge of this. So that's what Absalom does. He takes all of David's concubines, has sex with all of them in a tent in full view of Israel, strictly to embarrass these women and his father. So after he does this horrible act, now he's going to chase down his own dad, try to kill him and take over his army. So that's where we are in the story of Absalom right now. And this is clearly not something that any son should do to their father. Clearly not something that any good king or any good leader would do to gain power. So this is the reason I bring that up, is just to emphasize where we are in Absalom's heart and the way he's approaching this battle he's about to enter. So starting in 2 Samuel 18, in verse 1, David mustered the men who were with him and appointed over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. David sent out troops, a third under the command of Joab, a third under Joab's brother Abishai, son of Zariah, and a third under Ittai the Gittite. The king told the troops, I myself will surely march out with you. But the men said, you must not go out. If we are forced to flee, they won't care about us. Even if half of us die, they won't care. But you are worth 10,000 of us. It would be better now for you to give us support from the city. The king answered, I will do whatever seems best to you. So the king stood beside the gate while all his men marched out in units of hundreds and thousands. The king commanded Joab, Abishai the Hittite, be gentle with the young man Absalom for my sake. And all the troops heard the king giving orders concerning Absalom to each of the commanders. David's army marched out of the city to fight Israel, and the battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. There, Israel's troops were routed by David's men, and the casualties that day were great. 20,000 men. The battle spread over the whole countryside, and the forest swallowed up more men that day than the sword. Now Absalom happened to meet David's men. He was riding his mule, and as the mule went under the thick branches of a large oak, Absalom's hair got caught in the tree. He was left hanging in midair, while the mule he was riding kept on going. When one of the men saw what had happened, he told Joab, "I just saw Absalom hanging in an oak tree." Joab said to the man who had told him this, "What? You saw him? Why didn't you strike him to the ground right there? Then I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a warrior's belt." But the man replied, "Even if 1,000 shekels were weighed out into my hands, I would not lay a hand on the king's son. In our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai the Ittai, protect the young man Absalom for my sake. And if I had put my life in jeopardy, and nothing is hidden from the king, you would have kept your distance from me." Joab said, "I'm not going to wait like this for you." So he took 3 javelins in his hand and plunged them into Absalom's heart while Absalom was still alive in the oak tree. And 10 of Joab's armor bearers surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. Then Joab sounded the trumpet, and the troops stopped pursuing Israel, for Joab halted them. They took Absalom, threw him into a big pit in the forest, and piled up a large heap of rocks over him. Meanwhile, all the Israelites fled to their homes. During his lifetime, Absalom had taken a pillar and erected it in the king's valley as a monument to himself, for he thought, "I have no son to carry on the memory of my name." He named the pillar after himself, and it is called Absalom's monument to this day. Now, Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, said, "Let me run and take the news to the king that the Lord has vindicated him by delivering him from the hand of his enemies." "You are not the one to take the news today," Joab told him. "You may take the news another time, but you must not do so today because the king's son is dead." Then Joab said to the Cushite, "Go tell the king what you have seen." The Cushite bowed down before Joab and ran off. Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, again said to Joab, "Come what may, but please let me run behind the Cushite." But Joab replied, "My son, why do you want to go? You don't have any news that will bring you a reward." He said, "Come what may, I want to run." So Joab said, "Run." Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. While David was sitting between the inner and outer gates, the watchman went up to the roof of the gateway by the wall. As he looked out, he saw a man running alone. The watchman called out to the king and reported it. The king said, "If he is alone, he must have good news." And the runner came closer and closer. Then the watchman saw another runner, and he called down to the gatekeeper, "Look, another man running alone." The king said, "He must also bring good news. He must be bringing good news too." The watchman said, "It seems to me that the first one runs like Ahimaaz, son of Zadok." "He's a good man," the king said. "He comes with good news." Then Ahimaaz called out to the king, "All is well." He bowed down before the king with his face to the ground and said, "Praise be to the Lord your God. He has delivered up those who have lifted their hands against my lord the king." The king asked, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" Ahimaaz answered, "I saw a great confusion just as Joab was about to send the king's servant and me, your servant, but I don't know what it was." The king said, "Stand aside and wait here." So he stepped aside and stood there. Then the Cushite arrived and said, "My lord the king, the Lord has vindicated you today by delivering you from the hand of all those who rose up against you." The king asked the Cushite, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" The Cushite replied, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up to harm you be like that young man." The king was shaken. He went up to the room over the gateway and wept. As he went, he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son, my son. Absalom, if only I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." Now in 2 Samuel 19, verse 1. Joab was told, "The king is weeping and mourning for Absalom." And for the whole army, the victory that day was turned into mourning, because on that day the troops heard it said, "The king is grieving for his son." The men stole into the city that day, and as men steal in who are ashamed when they flee from battle. The king covered his face and cried aloud, "Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son." Then Joab went into the house of the king and said, "Today you have humiliated all your men who have just saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters and the lives of your wives and concubines. You love those who hate you and hate those who love you. You have made it clear today that the commanders and their men mean nothing to you. I see that you would be pleased if Absalom were alive today and all of us were dead. Now go out and encourage your men. I swear by the Lord that if you don't go out, not a man will be left with you by nightfall. This will be worse for you than all the calamities that have come on you from your youth till now. So the king got up and took his seat in the gateway. When the men were told, "The king is sitting in the gateway," they all came before him. Meanwhile, the Israelites fled to their homes. So at this point in the story, obviously Absalom is killed. His rebellion did not work. He did all these horrible things to his father and Israel. So somehow David is still incredibly sorrowful about his son being killed the way he was. So Jeremy, in this story, we see everything that Absalom has done. We see how hard David worked to build this kingdom, everything he had to accomplish to be the king of Israel. And now his son Absalom just tries to take it all from him, gets killed, and somehow David is still sad about all that. What do you think is going on in David's heart here? Is he just a sad father, or is there more going on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think what it is about any parent and their son or daughter, right? I think David, for some reason, has just a very forgiving heart. You know, I think automatically about David and like what people describe him as, you know, a man after God's own heart. And the amount of grace David gives his son is beyond astonishing, right? Like, it's almost like unimaginable. Like, I think any person in this world could denounce their kin by the things that Absalom has done. And I don't understand how he has this much grace, but I do understand obviously his love for his son. And I think we've talked about it before about the relationship between father and son. You may not agree with what they do, but understand you have compassion, empathy about the situation, and that you love them. You know, and the unfortunate part about this situation is David's love wasn't enough for Absalom, right? Mm-hmm. And Absalom continuously did what he wanted to do, regardless of who was tempting him to do the things he did, right? And I think we can relate that just with any one of us. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the bad things we do, right? We could easily justify the things we do. We could easily be manipulated for the bad things we do. And the entire time, it's our Father, who in this situation we'll describe as God, still loves us, even though we do all these things. And it's that grace that should bring us back. But we do make the choice whether to come back or not. Yeah, and I think this is just a prime example of, you know, similar to what you can see with our relationship with God. And the first thing I thought too about this entire thing was, like, when Nathaniel prophesied all this, like he spoke to David about all the things that would happen because David betrayed God. And it's wild to see it happened so many years later too. You know, his wives were being raped essentially by his son in open view of Israelite because of David, you know, doing what he did.
And that goes right back to exactly what God said would happen to David. All of this will be brought out into the light. Nothing you do will be hidden. And you're absolutely right. That's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah. And you bring that phrase up, like nothing will be hidden. And I think that's super important to talk about, right? I think that's important for us who Like any one of us, this is what I tell people all the time, any one of us could hide our sin, right? We could literally just do our best to hide it. Nobody would never know. I know there are a ton of people right now who are probably living in sin and they're just hiding it, right? But it's always, it could always get revealed if God allowed, if God wants it to. So those who like try to manipulate, I guess, the normality of, or the normal way of life, like God will reveal that. And I think of like church leaders, and I think of, you know, priests, pastors, whomever, those who try to see, try to manipulate the system or manipulate their power, and God reveals it. You know, I know there's a few, I guess, major churches that have been revealed the last few years about their, you know, unfortunate use of power and manipulation and their false teaching to try to gain people and money. And like the money used for personal gain. And it's wild to witness, but I think if you know the truth, eventually it's going to be shown. And I think this is just another example of God showing Israel, like your king's not, it's just another failure, you know? Yeah. And it's over and over again. And it's like, look at all the things that have happened because you guys chose a king to begin with.
Yeah. And one thing that came to mind while you were saying that is just how the grace of David towards his son, and that looking back at from where David knows that he started the things that he did by raping that man's wife, killing him, and then still having the opportunity to repent. And now his son has done these horrible things. And I think part of it would be that in David's heart, he's like, okay, this is where we all start. And maybe if I were in, this would be David saying this, maybe if I were in Absalom's shoes, I would be doing the same thing. But I've been given an opportunity to make up for what I've done, and I want my son to be given the same opportunity. And so it's like, okay, yes, you've slept with my concubines, you've taken over my army, you've rebelled against me, I've done nothing to deserve this treatment from you, but the people that I've sinned against did nothing to earn that treatment from me. And so I think it would be David looking into Absalom's future and saying, he could be where I am one day and still be faithful and still have God on his side. So he says to his army, take it easy on him, don't kill him, because if you kill him, then there's no chance for repentance. And when he is told your son has been killed, that's the end of that hope, right? That hope is now gone. There's no more future. There's no more chance for repentance. David's hope for his son ending up with the same level of grace that David's got, all that is gone. So I think from that perspective, it's understandable why David is so mournful about his son dying, right? And just understanding those opportunities are now gone, and that part of the story is now written.
Yeah, and I think going back to what we talked about in a previous episode about, you know, how many shekels do we carry, right? Or how much of our debt has been forgiven. And, you know, David has had thousands and thousands of, you know, like dollars or whatever forgiven, and he's really understanding in this point of his life that, like, it doesn't matter the weight or the amount of the debt, it can be forgiven. And I mean, even after everything, I think just it's encouraging to see David still have faith in God throughout this entire process. And I think that's what we're going to be reminded, right? Like, David's not doing this just because of his grace. He has faith that God can change people, regardless of their past crimes. And he has that faith because he's still made king. He's still king. And he's being humbled out over and over again by his own kids. And he's still sitting there like, I'm still going to have faith. And I just think it's great to see him not give up on God too in this situation.
So do you think that Absalom had any desire to, do you think that he was coming from a good place? Like, do you think that Absalom was actually like, I would be a better king. I would be a better servant for God. I would be a better conduit between them and God.
No,
it was just purely selfish. He just wanted to be king. It had nothing to do with bringing help or peace to anybody. It was just, my dad's king. I want to be king. I'm going to kill him and be powerful and wealthy. It had nothing to do with righteousness or what was his heart behind?
I think he was just blinded by greed and power. Because all he had to do was wait until his dad died.
And he would have been king.
He would have gotten the inheritance, right? But he didn't want to wait. He needed it and wanted it now. That's his motivation, I think, is just power and greed and just feeling the love of the people, which you understand, but you're like, it's just blinded by sin. And I think this is just another case of him blinded by sin. I will say, when he was hanging from that tree, though, I guarantee you, he was second-guessing everything he's ever done. And I guarantee you, when his hair got caught on a tree, like, I can't imagine that. Like, riding into battle, your hair gets caught on an oak tree, and you're just dangling there, like, save me. And then your father's right-hand man takes a spear to your chest.
Three of them.
Yeah, exactly. And in that moment, I think he probably realized, if only I didn't do the things I did. And
Yeah, that's a very good point, that Absalom obviously didn't ride into that battle thinking I'm going to lose, right? He went in obviously thinking, okay, this is going to be my day. I'm going to beat my father's army, kill him, and now I'm going to be king of Israel, and what a great day this will be. And obviously God had other plans, and those other plans were a humiliating, pathetic death. Right, for a king, for somebody that wanted to be king, you get your hair stuck in a tree, and you can't even defend yourself, and so these guys just come up and stab you, and it's like there's nothing you could do. Like, and it's meanwhile, David is behind the walls, kept safe, being the king he should, listening to his men. He says, "I want to ride out with you," and his men say, "No, you're too valuable for that. Let us go do it. You be king behind the walls." And direct from there. And Absalom, on the other side of it, goes out and thinking somehow he's infallible, invincible, that he could ride out, and that it seems like he thought that everything was under his control, right? And up until that point, maybe up until he got his hair stuck in the tree, and in his last moments, he was like, oh, I'm not in control of everything. There's somebody that's more powerful than me that's deciding what happens. And I should have been more humble. I should have listened. Those probably are not the thoughts that were going through his head in the last moments. He was probably just in terror and scared. But if he had the opportunity to think for a moment, oh gosh, how did I end up here? I was the son of the king of Israel, and I would have had that if I had just waited and been patient, but I wanted it now, and here I am, stuck in the woods with my army gone, everyone's running, and now I have this pathetic death. And it really does come, it's a great example of what kind of end awaits you if you think that everything is under your control and that everything that you do is the right thing, and it's all about your power and wealth, and it's all about your reputation. You have a pathetic, sad death at the end of it if you think that you're in control of everything.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people When you talk to people who are like experienced near-death experiences, you can instantly hear them talk differently than what they were prior to it, right? It's wild to see, even I did this, say like, oh, I got this job, or I did this, or I did that. And then I realized how my life could just be taken of a blink of an eye. And I've had a lot of near-death experiences in my life. And
being in the military.
Yeah, yeah. Being in the military, or like, bro, even like car accidents. Like I've had, just the other day, I almost, like I was driving and I looked to the left, no car. I looked to the right, no car. And I normally look to the left again because of the angle that I was, but I didn't this time. And I went to drive and I instantly stopped and avoided a collision. You know, like my life could just go like that in a blink of an eye. And
yeah.
I think when you talk to people who feel like they have it all, or they feel like they built it to the top, I'm telling you, if they have a chance on their deathbed to give it all their wealth away and all their fame away for one extra day with their loved ones, they would do it in a heartbeat. And it's surprising to me how many people, as the older you become, you start to realize that, you know, the experiences and the wisdoms that you become, you start to realize like life isn't about power, fame, glory, no money. It's about something so much more. And not everybody understands the meaning of their life, but hopefully one day they do. But you ask anybody and they'll be humbled a lot. And I just think of all these like famous people, right? I think of all these famous people who just lived a life and they realize, oh crap. But they try so hard to stay in their fame. Like bankruptcy, people who lose their, like, you know, just their status, and they get humbled really quickly. And it's just wild for me to see. Like, I heard stories of like my buddies whose friends have won millions of dollars at a scratch ticket in a lottery, and that millions of dollars of all that wealth caused them to be a drug addict. Never did drugs before, but then hung out with the wrong crowd, did the wrong things. They lost it all. They became addicts. They became, you know, pretty much put into an institution where they had to get rehabilitated. Mm. And it's just wild to me how people, if you sat back and really looked at your life and realized this is all this is, and it's not going to last. And I think about like people we know, like how many people do you know have, just for anyone listening, like when do you remember your loved ones, like, or people you know or you knew well after they die? Like, do you remember them, their death anniversary, right? Do you remember them every single day when you wake up, or does the memory fade until something causes it to come back? You know, I think about like the death of my brother or my grandmother or my friends who've committed suicide at a young age. I think I honestly sat here before and I was like, when did they die? Mm-hmm. Well, how long has it been? Has it really been 5 years, 10 years? And you're like, that's insane. And you don't even realize it because it's like a blink of an eye. And their fame and their glory and their name, like a Facebook post that's going to bring back their glory, the name will fade. And the only name that won't fade, and that's been going around for quite a few thousands of years, whether it was known or unknown, is God, is Jesus. And it's just a good reminder in general to see like how God is so eternal and we are not. And people are going to slowly realize as they get through their life, there's something more out here. And I'm sure, going back to Absalom, I'm sure he was sitting there like, I want what I want. Boom, I'm going to get what I want. I got one third of his kingdom or half his kingdom. And he's like, I did that. I went out there every day for 4 years trying to convince the people that I will be a better king. And seriously, you can just see it. You can see the pride. You can see the everything. And he's probably standing up there in that oak tree like, dang.
Yeah. That's what I mean. All the four years of effort, just like all the dirty, horrible things he had to do just to die in a tree, right? Like, you don't get to lead anybody. You're not king of anything. You have no wealth. Now you're, for the rest of history, now 3,000 years later, there's two guys on a Taming Tribulation podcast talking about what an idiot you are because you made all these horrible choices. Now, and if he had just been humble enough, this story, we won't be talking about what an amazing king Absalom was and what an idiot his son was, right? But this is the way it had to go. And so you make a great point that when we think we're in control of everything, when we think that our reputation and our wealth is the thing that matters, you have a rude awakening coming, because when you're dead and gone, nobody's gonna remember that stuff, especially if you got your wealth in nefarious ways or got your reputation through negative things. It's like, now for the rest of time, that's what you're going to be known for. And if you're thinking, how can I live for God, how can I live for Jesus, those circumstances will be changed, right? Like, God's not going to let you die a pathetic, lonely death. If you're truly his servant, he's going to bring you to something better. And it's not going to be your reputation, but he's doing it to show people his power. And Absalom just did not use any gifts he was given for that purpose. He only used them for himself and ended up dying that way.
Yeah, I think just the idea of being humbled and really recognizing that God is in control of all these things is just, it's just a good reminder, you know, for all of us.
I think that's a good place to end this one off. So I hope you can see a little bit of Absalom in yourself, to the listener, because Jeremy and I can certainly see Absalom in ourselves and where we've taken the wrong path that didn't lead toward what God wants, but what we want, and how that never turns out the way we want it to. Thanks for listening to Taming Tribulation. Catch you next week.